In 1962, Karen Armstrong entered a convent in England which followed the rule of St. Ignatius of Loyola, the founder of the Jesuit Society. 7 years later, Armstrong left the convent and spent the following years trying to readjust to the secular world. It was both difficult and painful. In 1976, she was diagnosed with epilepsy, treated, and released from what she calls her private hell. Today, Karen Armstrong is a well-known writer of books on religion, including A History of God, Islam, and Buddha. Her newest is called The Spiral Staircase, My Climb Out of Darkness. It's published by Knopf, and Karen Armstrong is in our studio. What a pleasure to meet you.
It's lovely to be here again.
Let's go back to the beginning, 1962. You had just graduated from what Americans call high school, essentially 17 years old. Why did you want to be a nun?
The main reason was I wanted to find God. I thought I was starting on a fabulous spiritual adventure, in the course of which I would become serene, wise, transfigured, inspired, inspiring, even a saint. And because I was so young and so immature, I thought that would happen pretty quickly. I'd soon be absolutely imbued with God and would lose all this confused adolescent muddle that adolescents have to endure on their path to adulthood.
There's an incident you tell about how tough it is. Tell the story of the sewing machine.
We spent most of our time when we were training doing needlework. I was very, very bad at it. And I broke the needle on the good sewing machine in the postulant's community room. My postulant mistress was furious with me and told me to go and practice on the lesser, more archaic machine next door until I'd mastered the art. And I replied, "But there's no needle in that machine, Mother." And she said, "Don't you answer me back. You'd never speak to your superior so pertly. Go and practice on that machine, needle or no needle, until I tell you to stop." So for 2 weeks I treadled on that machine for half an hour a day. The idea was that we were full of worldly standards, worldly ideas, purely secular outlook, and we had to transform ourselves to taking on the viewpoint of God, and our superior was in the place of God for us, and all worldly values would be turned upside down. When, as I sat there treadling, I had to tell myself, not this is a ridiculous waste of time, but this is the best way I can be spending my time. This is God's way. In fact, the postulant mistress had simply forgotten, was astounded to see me treadling away at this empty machine until it gave me another telling off.
This whole idea of breaking one down to then create this new life for you as a nun and this spiritual creature. When you left in 1969, and later another sister, a nun who had become a friend of yours, left as well, but before she left, she had suffered terribly with anorexia. You write that you were both recovering from the damage that was done to you at the convent. What was the damage?
Well, basically, we both entered at a very difficult period in the order's history. We were the last people to go through the old system before it was reformed by the Second Vatican Council. In a sense, we encountered the system at its worst, because as if to ward off impending unwelcome change, our superiors had appointed a very conservative novice mistress who revived archaic practices which her two predecessors had discarded as being unsuitable for 20th century girls.
Do you think your experience might have been different had you entered a less strict order and perhaps entered later?
No, I don't think so. There are very few people who can live a life that's totally chaste, totally obedient, so that you entirely give up your will to someone else, totally poor, without possessions or that kind of responsibility for worldly business, and remain mature and whole. I just couldn't do it. I was breaking up under it because I was trying and not succeeding. Plus, I was absolutely hopeless at prayer, meditation. I could not do it. I can concentrate on my work for hours at a time. I don't even notice the time going by. But I could not keep my mind on God for more than 2 minutes. And try as I would, I just couldn't do it. I left because I couldn't find God, and I was becoming a lesser person, not an enhanced, transfigured person.
Outside, why did you continue to go to Mass?
I went on going to Mass, and I was kept in the church largely because I was lucky enough to go to the Dominican church in Oxford, where the Dominicans are very intelligent men, and they helped me a great deal in those early years.
Talk a little bit about the epilepsy, because it was something that was diagnosed quite late. You had gone to psychiatrists. People thought you were just being overly dramatic. It's interesting because mystics in the Christian traditions were often epileptics, these visions of both heaven and hell. You described the physical sensation of smelling sulfur, for example, which is, of course, a smell that is associated in literature with hell. Is it something that contributed to belief or the lack of it?
At first, when my epilepsy was diagnosed, my neurologist said, "It's interesting that you were a nun, because people with this type of epilepsy of the temporal lobe are often preoccupied with religious and philosophical matters, partly because one is often feeling on the brink of another kind of world, and you are having these strange experiences. And when you have a grand mal attack, you sometimes glimpse God." Dostoevsky, another temporal lobe epileptic, writes about this in his wonderful novel, The Idiot, and describes that moment far better than I can do. And at first, when I started my religious studies after my diagnosis, I thought that all religious experience could be put down to this kind of neurological irregularity. This is my skeptical period. But now I am convinced that this is not the case. Religious experience at its best, because there's an awful lot of bad religion around, is not about feeling or violent visions or voices or strange experience. It is learning to behave in a way that changes you and transforms you so slowly and incrementally, not about great flashes of feeling. Much to my surprise, my study of religion has led me back to a form of prayer. It's gone from the head right down to my, let us call it my heart, my inner being. So that sometimes when I'm involved in the study of a text and writing furiously away, looking things up, doing all kinds of scholarly things, I will get moments of absolute awe, wonder and transcendence. The sort of experience that I was hoping to have in my meditation as a nun.
When did you begin to really think for yourself?
It was a fabulous moment. I'd reached a really bad time in my life. I was really at rock bottom, suicidal, and my epilepsy had still not been diagnosed. And I said, I've got to give up this psychiatry. It's not doing me any good. It's not helping. I've got to stop relying on outside help and find the means to work with what I have. Just accept this disability, as other people have to accept blindness or deafness, I have to accept this malady, which seems that I'm going mad, but at the moment, let me accept it. Just after that, I attended a lecture by Dame Helen Gardner, who was lecturing on the first poem in T.S. Eliot's Ash Wednesday, and immediately I recognised the poem. This was what Eliot was saying when he says, "I do not hope to turn again. I couldn't turn the clock back." The second thing were those lines later on in the poem where he says, "I rejoice that things are as they are." So no more telling yourself black is white, white is black. Look things clearly and calmly and realistically in the face. Now, I didn't know it at the time, but that those two elements, the fact that you must not wait for help from outside, but try to work with yourself, and to see things as they are what the great masters of the spiritual life in all the major traditions say are essential prerequisites for religion. I had begun the quest that was going to bring me back to a form of faith and to an absolute delight in my religious studies, which it has become a form of prayer.
Karen Armstrong's new book is called The Spiral Staircase, My Climb Out of Darkness. It's published by Knopf. Thank you very much.
Thank you.